This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So when you know where you need to go at the end, does that leave a lot less room for sort of improv when you know you have to set up so much stuff to get to where you're going? Mm-hmm. Or has there been a lot of inspiration on the set with the actors? And
totally. A lot of inspiration. Because, you know, all these scenes are sort of, you know, written down, and I direct in a way that, you know, I direct it in a certain way, and then if an actor comes up with, like, it's more logical to do this, I just change it on the spot. So, scenes change while we're shooting. And nowadays, you know, you while you're cutting or shooting your movie, you're cutting the movie in the same time. So it's like, oh, you look back at that scene, oh, you know, so it's a sort of an organic process almost, which I love. That's good.
So you're doing one of these things where you're seeing like a sort of a rough assembly.
Yes.
And so have you realized that following day, oh, we need to pick up on that, let's go get that?
Yes. Or for me, directing is like sort of a little bit like cooking or something. You know that you make this interesting recipe, but while you're putting all the ingredients together, you cannot never oversee what it's going to taste exactly. So while you're doing that and you're tasting like, oh, it's actually sadder than I thought it would be. So the next scene, if he leaves that sad or that angry, the next scene, you know, you pick it up. It's not all set in stone. So because I really care about the emotional journey of the characters. So it's a little improvising that way.
One of the things about the people love about the original movie is the practical effects, and I know you're using on here. One of the things that drives me crazy about the first movie is that you can actually tell when they edit from one practical effect, one thing to another thing. Are you trying to make it a little smoother, or try to transition more like using CG or something different?
I mean, sort of out of an homage to that movie, I thought we have to do it as much practical as we can. My experience also is that for reaction shots, you know, if you have even if you're not going to use it, just the reaction of an actor on a real monster is so right, much better than. So we will decide in post production how much we're going to use it, but I intend to use as much as I can.
I think in that one we see a lot of different stages of the creature, mm-hmm. different things, but it's always like we never really saw how it went from one stage to the next,
right.
Because it's kind of like
right.
different things.
Yeah, there's a little different. That, you know, even if you see that guy behind you, I like the sort of human element still in the monster, just as it is sort of a passenger, becomes a passenger of this creature. So there's always in JC's movie, it's really completely, you know, just a big bloody blob, which I like, you know. But I thought, you know, maybe it's nice to see the characters we already know be part of that monster.
I was just curious, film or digital, and why?
I just hate it. Digital.
Oh, okay.
Looks ugly. Even we should see this anamorphic, which, you know, looks great. I just don't like it. I think it feels like video. You know, the anamorphic, even, you know, although everybody shoots this sort of 2x3, 2x35, they shoot Super 35, but they put bars on it, so it looks like CinemaScope, like the old days. But I really pushed for the real anamorphic feel.
So you're shooting with anamorphic lenses?
Yeah.
I heard there's not that many lenses available.
That's true. And you need more light. You know, the lenses are slower than normal 35. But, well, you know, from these old movies, it looks great.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Other than The Thing, obviously, and Alien, were there other films or maybe just artwork that you and the cast looked at, maybe you and the screen sort of as a group to get you in a mindset?
No, because I didn't want to push them in a certain way. I spoke about Alien, about the realism of those characters. If you would watch just the breakfast scene and you would show somebody, you know, that scene, it doesn't mean it has to be a horror movie.
Sure.
You know, and that's what I like about it. Polanski is a general reference that, you know, that's more about acting, and then it becomes a horror movie, which I always like, you know, sort of you sort of slowly descend into this hell. But in the first moment you don't know, actually.
Sure.
You know?
Now, a lot of the cast in this film are from Norway, who are, in some cases, theater actors, or in some cases, film actors who haven't worked in a film of this scale, this size, this budget. What is it like working with that? What are they bringing to the table from Norway? And do you speak Norwegian?
No. Well, it's close to Holland, so the culture is a little the same.
Okay.
I picked faces that you wouldn't regularly see in a movie, I think. So I think that brings a certain authenticity to it. Some of them I had to correct a little, you know, that it becomes not too big or that it's not too stagey. But they were really nice to work with.
Are you giving these characters more development? Like, one of the criticisms of the 82 one was that you didn't really find out much about these men. They were just there.
So is
there more backstory to some of these guys?
Yeah, and no, because what I even in Alien, you don't know anything about Dallas or Ripley or, you know, it's just how they perform. You imagine who they are, and if you do that good, then you don't need to, like, you know, is he married or not, or all that sort of. So it's all about performance, I think, and what kind of character they are at the moment, at that point. So I don't give them a lot of backstory, you know.
Has it been a challenge for you personally? You know, I know you have a big commercial background, and you're directing this huge budget Hollywood movie. What can you talk about that, making that transition?
Well, it frightened me in the beginning. I'm basically, you know, working on a set and working with actors, and that's all the same. So the moment you're doing it and you're in the moment, you don't have time to think about that. You really just have to make it as good as you possibly can on the moment. So
it's also your first feature film, and it's not, you know, you're not making a character drama. You're making a movie that fanboys have a vested interest in. Are you prepared to face the fanboys? Are you prepared to go to conventions You know, do you know what's ahead of you? I mean, this is a project that a lot of people have passion for.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Have you been briefed on what you can expect?
No.
Well, Lizzie will tell you.
You know, I love that movie so much, and I'm just, you know, blindly went into it, and I just give it my best, and I know I'm going to be, you know. I mean, and that's how it is. As long as I stay true to what I believe is a good movie, and it's what is my vision, that's all I can do.
Well, if you have that anticipation, though, what kind of things do you think that the fanboys are going to be concerned about? What are you prepared for to hear
well,
about?
Well, the monsters are different, and it's not as maybe it's different. I haven't even thought about it. So maybe that's the best answer.
Between this and Army of the Dead, you obviously have a love for genre movies. That's something you kind of like feel like that's the direction you want to take, go, and it's just a matter that this is a good way to get into Hollywood movies, and you feel like you really want to stay in this kind of genre.
Well, I like genre movies, and I like when they're sort of crossovers, when it's not like just pure like Soul or something, which is just, you know, just pure horror. When it's sort of a crossover between drama and horror, that's what I really like. Films like Repulsion or something. I adore those movies because they just start up this weird and become slowly this dark little you know, dark fairy tales. That's, I mean, Repulsion is a horror movie, but it's a strange horror movie.
Right.
You know.
Do you have specific memories of your first exposure to the thing?
That I wanted to see in the cinema, and it just blew me away. Like, I really, that the ending was at that dark, which is something I really liked. And so I'm really fighting for the same sort of tone.
But since we know what the ending is, how do you, you know, going in, as you said, the helicopter, the dog, etc., how do you make sure that you make that ending have the same?
Well, I have a sort of spectacular end in mind, a sort of big sad ending. So it ends a little bit in two ways, because we have to continue the story but have to end this story. So we found a way for that. But it's the same sort of darkness.
Are your, is there any reference made to the U.S. base? Do they mention them at all? They do.
Yes.
Yeah. So they know they're out there?
They try to contact them.
They try to?
Okay. Yeah, because they're in distress and they try any, you know, Swedish and even, you know, Outpost 31, of course. And they even, a part of the team decides to get to there, to the outpost. They never make it, but, you know, so it's...
So no Wilford Brimley cameo?
No.
Cut away to him, like, you know, hanging up on them.
Yeah.
Well, how about a different approach? The Wilford Brimley character, you know, obviously we now have different associations with Wilford Brimley, but he still brings a sort of age and gravitas to the first movie. Is there a corresponding character who serves a similar purpose?
Yeah. That Norwegian guy they call for, which is like the Norwegian... You know, professor, who they because this is a camp with geoscientists, you know, geologists. They don't know anything about, you know, biology, or so they, you know, they call for this guy to help them out. And he's a sort of, turns out to be the sort of dark father figure.
With this being your first, you know, Hollywood kind of movie, what's been the biggest, what was the thing you thought was going to be the biggest challenge, and what actually has been the biggest challenge?
The biggest breakout scene. The breakout, you know, the climax scene where this biggest creature appears. But everything goes haywire. Because there's so much things happening, there was so much many characters at the same time. It's a lot of acting and a lot of special effects in the same time. So that's the biggest challenge so far.
Are you one of these people that we were watching earlier and we saw many takes on this one particular scene?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way you normally direct, where there's that many takes?
Yeah, if I can't find what I want, then I keep going till I. Yeah, find that right moment.
Well, have you done any of these scenes where you've only done two or three takes?
Yeah, a lot of them.
The producers are here.
Yeah, a lot of them. You know, but this is a sort of what you saw as a goodbye scene. You know these characters, they really care about each other, and she has to burn this guy, and so for him to step away from it and give her the go ahead to burn his best friend, you know, that's, you know, you need a certain expression for that little beat. So I was finding that expression.
No, totally.
Yeah.
I'm also curious about how much do you read online sites like...
I don't.
Not at all.
I do, but no, I don't.
So you did before you started filming?
Yeah, but you know, if you start reading about who the fuck is this guy, you know, remaking, well, maybe you should stay away from it.
Well, I don't even necessarily mean for this film. I mean, are you one of these people that enjoys reading the movie sites and seeing what's going on?
Yes. Yes. To a certain degree, you know, but...
Can you talk about the casting? How did you arrive at someone like Mary Elizabeth Winstead or Joel Edgerton, especially since he's, I guess, a lead, you know,
yes,
male lead, but
yes,
nobody really knows who he is. American audiences.
No, I was just trying to find this believable hard-boiled guy, and hard-boiled, just, you know, a Vietnam vet, you know, who just starts a business in Antarctica and doesn't care about people anymore. You know, maybe he experienced a lot of stuff. So we cast a lot of people, and then he came. I read about him that he was in a play with on Broadway, which was, had raving reviews, and he just came in, and that's the guy. And for Mary, we were trying to find somebody who was between 25 and 30, and believable as a clever person that could be a scientist. So that, you know, the moment somebody has pretends to be a scientist and you don't believe it, basically, you know, step out.
Right.
So that was, you know, the what I was looking for.
Did you get to audition with her, or because I don't think there's anything she's done prior work-wise?
Yeah, we auditioned, and she, you know, she felt calm and strong and believable and sort of vulnerable in the beginning, and then she has to step up, you know, not because she wants to, but because she has to. You know, that's what I like.
In 1981, you could have the character that Kurt Russell played, and you could actually have it played by an American actor.
Right.
But nowadays, pretty much, it seems like you have to go to Australia to find to find an American alpha male.
Yeah. Why is that? Yeah, well, I'm an American. Tell me.
But you know what you saw. I mean, you know what you would have auditioned. Is there no American who's capable of doing that?
I don't know. There's something about the Aussies. They, you know. You send them into the woods and they build a treehouse in 5 minutes. Something, you know, John Wayne-ish or something.
But did it used to be that the Americans actually were the John Waynes, or, and now they just aren't anymore?
Is he a MacReady? Is that a MacReady parallel definitely going on with
him?
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah.
Have you met or spoken with John Carpenter?
No. I spoke. Yeah, but he's really, you know, reclusive, and I spoke to his old producer, and he endorses it, but you know, I said, you know, do your own thing, it's, you know, I'm not going to interfere, and so there probably will be a time, but it hasn't happened yet.
I see that today we've been watching, you've been filming with two cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Is there other days where you're filming with three or four, or is two your...
Hardly.
Have you done it on previous things?
No. Usually when you do two or three, for stunts, big stunts maybe, but the lighting is always, you light for a certain direction, and if you cover it with different angles, it becomes sort of mediocre, or, you know, a little concession for every camera, so I prefer not.
We also heard you're building the alien ship.
Mm.
How much fun did you have helping to design that thing, or did you sort of say...
No, a lot. I mean, that is one of the biggest challenges, because... How many really good alien ships have you seen in films?
Well, I saw Independence Day.
Exactly. So that was a big search, but I'm really happy with what we came up with.
Well, we heard that it doesn't feel man-made; it feels alien.
Yes.
Could you talk about how you got to that, to designing or helping to design that whole not feeling man-made feel?
Well, first of all, it's not designed to walk into straight hallways, you know, so there's not so much up and down anymore.
Sorry, can I interrupt just for 25 seconds?
Yeah.
Can you just hit pause and record and I'll just ask you a question?
Sure.
Sorry, guys.
All good?